Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go to the northeast with a man with a lovely accent by the name of Mike Halliwell, and let's talk about the paranormal. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
I've gone to the northeast, haven't I?
Yes, you have.
Oh, I'm so glad. I thought I made a mistake. I thought I'd gone to the wrong part of the country.
This is the heart of Geordieland.
Now, you're quite a prolific writer. I shouldn't have even said that, should I, really? You love writing books about this.
Yes, I do.
Tell us who you are.
Basically, I suppose I'm a guy with an obsession, which I've had since I was 11 years old. Always been interested in the paranormal. After I read a book that was written by a retired US Air Force officer, and he wrote a book called Flying Saucers Are Real, and I had a project to do when I was at school for astronomy over the 6 weeks holidays. I hadn't a clue what to do, so I unashamedly just cut and pasted a load of stuff out of this book on UFOs and handed it in and got a decent mark. It was plagiarism, really. But that sort of got me hooked.
Why are you hooked? Because surely it's a subject that can never be answered.
I think, really, my answer, I would have to look at it from the perspective of a freelance journalist. You know, I mean, I run my own sort of little one-man media business. I do this full-time for a living. And, you know, I remember years ago, when I used to write part-time, there was an editor of a magazine that I wrote for. He said, listen, let me tell you something. He said, in journalism, he said, always write about what you know. And I've always been the sort of person that book trends, you know. I'm a bit very sort of unorthodox the way that I approach pretty much everything in my life. So I decided to write about the stuff that I didn't know. And I think that's the allure with the paranormal. You're investigating and writing about things that we really don't know. There's a lot of dark and very little light. And I think it's that added extra sort of challenge, if you like, about investigating something and writing about something that we really just don't understand in any great detail. And it's just that, I suppose, the challenge of the unknown.
Within the paranormal world, there is an awful lot of conspiracy theories, aren't there? Do you find it difficult to uncloud the mist over stories because of this?
I think the biggest problem in sort of unclouding that mist that hangs over just about every story, I think, is cynicism. I mean, I'm not a great conspiracy theorist. I mean, I believe that, you know, there are conspiracies, but it's I think a lot of them are, to be honest with you, that are just sort of flights of fancy. But I think when you're investigating a story, the first problem you come across is that most people, when the witness or experience a paranormal event, they don't even understand what's happened to them. And the last thing they think is that it's something paranormal. So they may not even be aware they've had an experience. So that's your first stumbling block, getting the person to tell you about something that happened to them. And then you say, well, you know, have you got a rational explanation for that? And then they realise they haven't. And then there's the cynicism, I think, by default, I think people in this sort of country of ours we're very cynical by nature. It's just part of our character. And so we look for rational explanations for things, when in fact there may not be one. I mean, there's a colleague of mine once said to me that when the skeptics, when the answers that they come up with for paranormal phenomena are actually stranger or more bizarre than the phenomena they're trying to explain away, then you know you're onto something. And that's a maxim which I sort of do believe in, actually, that there are a lot of skeptics out there, and I regularly sort of do battle with them in the media. And sometimes they're struggling. You can see they come up with a rational explanation, and you know that deep down they can see there's something very bizarre or very weird has happened. But I think that they feel uncomfortable about admitting it. It's almost as if they're letting the side down. So I think that's a big problem that we have, is this sort of cynicism.
Mike, do you find any danger within this world?
Yeah, I mean, I've investigated poltergeist cases. I've investigated a case where I had a knife thrown at me. That was a case I investigated with Darren W. Ritson. We actually ended up writing a book about it. And this knife just came out of nowhere and flew over my shoulder. I'm actually investigating a case at the moment with another colleague of mine, John Triplow. And it involves a number of police officers, actually, in the South, who've seen some absolutely bizarre things. And they're basically dealing with a creature which is not a poltergeist. It's some sort of entity. And I can't say too much about it at the minute, but we do believe that we know what it is we're dealing with. And this thing has left extremely threatening and intimidating messages on my telephone and on the telephones of other people. And it makes bizarre noises that have no rational explanation. And it has actually physically attacked people. I mean, I've got a 20-minute tape recording of this thing attacking four people in a car that was actually travelling. And it's actually pitiful. You can hear the screams and the yells of these four people as they're being physically beaten by something that they can't see.
Wow. Do you find doors closed in your face over these things when you're writing books like this?
Yeah, I mean, the doors that do close in your face tend to be when you want to get a platform to air these views. I mean, a lot of newspaper editors are very good and will open the door to paranormal phenomena basically because it makes a good story. But there are a small number of editors who are very cynical, and they just won't carry stories like that. I mean, I remember a few years ago, I was coming very, very close to getting a column in a newspaper, and the editor, to be fair to him, he was very open and honest about it. He asked me up, we went out for a drink, and he said, "I think you're a brilliant writer, and I love the column, but I'm not going to run it." And I said, "Why?" And he says, "Because I don't believe in this stuff, it's all baloney." So on the basis that he didn't believe in something, he was prepared to reject something which, from a business point of view, professional point of view, ticked all the right boxes. But it went against his own personal belief or disbelief in paranormal phenomena. So, yeah, doors do get closed. And there are a lot of people in certain professions who will not admit that they have witnessed paranormal phenomena. Pilots are very, very loath to admit that they've seen UFOs for the simple reason it's professional suicide for them to admit that they've actually seen something like that.
So do you believe there's lots of pilots have had experiences then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've actually spoken to them, I've interviewed them, and they all say the same thing. What I saw was absolutely extraordinary, and there's just no explanation for it. One guy told me that he'd seen this huge cigar-shaped object with sort of lights along the side, just shoot past his aircraft. And there was two saucer-shaped objects following in its wake. And he said, "I saw it absolutely clearly." He said, "I know what I saw." He said, "It wasn't a case of misattribution or misidentification." He said, "These things were just beyond anything that I've ever seen in my life. No known aircraft." He says, "And bear in mind, I'm a pilot. I know what I'm talking about." And I said, "So, what did your bosses say about this?" And he said, "You're joking." He said, "Do you really think I was going to tell them?" He said, "That would be it. That would be the finish."
Are you a religious person?
I don't know whether religious is the right word. I have a spiritual sort of dimension in my life. Yeah, I'm on my father's side. I have Native American heritage, and I do take sort of Native American spirituality very seriously, and it's something which is a great influence in my life. But as far as I'm able to, when I do an investigation, I leave that at the door.
I ask that for a reason, Mike, because then I'm going to ask, do you believe there is a devil? Do you believe there is evil in this world?
I certainly believe there's evil in this world. I mean, I think, I don't suppose anybody could honestly even question that. But in terms of a devil, I do believe that there are extremely malign, violent spirits out there. I don't think that there's necessarily an archetypical spirit like the devil, sort of like a grand evil spirit that controls all the rest. But I do believe there are very, very dark spirits out there, and they can be extremely violent.
Mike, how many books have you read? How many books have you written?
I've actually written 12 books. I've got another 4 coming out this year. I've written over 1,000 sort of columns and features on the paranormal. I currently run 7 blogs and columns in magazines and on websites and stuff like that. So, I do this sort of 24/7. I start work at 4 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes don't finish till midnight.
Out of all those books, is there one story, apart from the poltergeist with the knife?
Yeah.
Is there one story that you nearly packed up?
I would say the book that I'm currently writing with John Triplow about this case involving these police officers is the most disturbing, and I think if anyone was going to make me pack my bags and walk away, it would have been this one. The book isn't out yet, but we've already had sort of quite good talks with the publisher, and it looks pretty much like the book is going to be published. And I've seen things, I mean, I've spoken to these police officers, and I mean, we've seen fires break out spontaneously at this person's house. We've interviewed police officers who have seen the most bizarre things inside this particular house. And in fact, 4 of them even said that they would not enter the premises again under any circumstances. And the good thing is that these policemen have all made signed statements to us, and they are most of them are prepared to be named. So this particular book, I would say this case, is the one that's disturbed me the most. And it's still not over. It's still an active case. And I have been threatened by this thing. And I've actually been on the receiving end of its antics, along with a lot of other people. So, yeah, every now and then you do find a disturbed one. But to be honest with you, it's an occupational hazard. I mean, every job has its sort of its negative side, and sort of interacting every now and then with these rather malign spirits is just something that you have to put up with.
I'm talking to Mike Hollowell. Mike, why do you think all of a sudden, I know television's been a big influence, but why do you think we are so fascinated with the whole spectrum of the unknown?
I think that it... if you go back even to, say, 150 years ago, people accepted the paranormal far more readily, but it was always seen in the context of folklore. People would accept the existence of strange creatures, sort of called boggles and boggarts and brags and bogeymen and all sorts of weird things that people sort of like are very sceptical about today. So the paranormal didn't really have a fascination because it was accepted. But then we sort of went, I think we got into sort of the 1900s, and there was rationalization and rationalism sort of like took over. You had sort of Charles Darwin, you know, sort of in the 1800s with the theory of evolution and so on. So spirituality and I think the unknown took a back seat, and it was very fashionable to be rational and to even possibly be an atheist. So we went through that period where I think everything was closeted, everything was cubbyholed, neatly tied up in little bundles by the academics. And then people realised that this wasn't a very satisfying state of affairs, that there is something, I think, within the human psyche that craves the unknown. We'll have to have a horizon that we'll have to cross, and we never ever get there. And I think there's something in us that makes us want to experience the unknown, or to be baffled, or to be puzzled. And I mean, it would be just a boring world if we understood everything. And so I think after going through that sort of, you know, over 100 years of rationalization and science, and people found it profoundly unsatisfying, the tables are now turned. And particularly with the internet and TV, people are now looking for that sort of exotic element of their life again, that sort of mystical element which disappeared. So the paranormal is now big business, because I think a lot of people find that satisfaction in the world of paranormal phenomena.
Do you not find, though, there's an awful lot of people within the industry that you're in are making an awful lot of money and are totally and utterly phony?
Yeah. I mean, I've often been asked the question, what do I think about fake mediums, you know? And my attitude is that, yes, there are a lot of fakes out there, and personally, I would have them metaphorically, if not literally, put up against a wall and shot, because I think that what they do is outrageous. However, I'm not too sure that sort of legislation, which is what a lot of people want, is the right road to go down, because once you start to legislate, you get things like the Fraudulent Mediums Act, which ended up with mediums being thrown into jail simply because somebody in authority wasn't convinced that they really had the powers that they claimed they had. And I think that's a very dangerous road to go down. And unfortunately, I do believe that we're going down that road again, because I don't know whether, you know, your listeners will have noticed, but often on programmes to do with the paranormal, and now they're all prefaced with this little thing, which is, this programme is for entertainment purposes only.
And never been scientifically proved.
Yeah, and I think that it's a dangerous road to go down. Personally, I would rather education was used to make people aware of...
How can you educate people to something that is unknown, Mike, and nobody can prove? Nobody has ever taken... Now, I wasn't going to go down this road, but as you brought it up, nobody has ever taken... No medium has ever taken up that challenge in America with £1 million. I think it's £1 million plus now. But nobody's ever taken it up. None of them come out.
Well, I know the challenge that you're referring to. And I'll not mention the guy's name because there are a lot of people in this world that are extremely litigious. However, I am aware of challenges that have been set. And in one particular case, one of the most famous challenges, I've actually read a very detailed analysis of the challenge. And one researcher concluded that it was impossible to fulfill the criteria of the challenge. So it's not that people aren't prepared to come forward and actually take up these challenges. It's just sometimes the criteria set them up to fail. And so they walk away because, you know, that's no challenge at all. It's just, it's a way of basically humiliating people who happen to believe in unconventional things. But, I mean, I think anybody who seriously has studied the paranormal would have to say, you know, that there are things that go on in this world that we simply don't understand. And I believe that those who say that everything can be explained, that there is absolutely nothing paranormal in this world at all, have either led a relatively sheltered life and maybe not witnessed anything themselves, or they're possibly insecure and don't want to believe in the existence of paranormal phenomena because the idea disturbs them too much. I mean, I actually lectured at a university recently, and I got taught to this student, and she said, "I only believe in things that I can see." And I said, "Really?" I said, "So, do you believe in sort of the Boer War, attack of Rome, the devastation of Vesuvius and all that?" I said, she says, "Oh, yeah, of course." I says, "But you said you only believe in things you can see." She says, "Well, yeah, but those things have been historically proven." And I said, "Yeah, but hang on, now you're moving the goalposts." I said, "At first you said you only believe things you can see. Now you're saying you believe in things that are historically proven." And I said, "Do you see what you're doing here?" I says, "You're avoiding facing up to something." And she admitted it, and she said, "Yes, you're right." I says, "So why do you think?" I says, "You're trying to avoid facing up to paranormal phenomena. Why are you trying to avoid accepting that they're real?" And she said, "Because," she said, I'm worried. I think if I look deep down and I'm honest with myself, that if I open one door and I believe, say, in ghosts, what am I going to be believing in tomorrow? UFOs, psychic phenomena, you know, sort of monsters." She said, "So it's easier just not to open that first door and just shut it all out." So she was quite candid and honest and admitted that it's not that she doesn't really believe in it. It's more to do with the fact that she doesn't want to believe in it.
Mike, how can they find you? You're a fascinating man. How can
they find you? I have a website. It's www.mikehallowell.com. And there's contact details on there. If anybody has a disturbing sort of phenomenon in their home that, or the workplace or whatever, it's really worrying them, they're free to email me, and I have colleagues who we investigate these cases actively, and so we're always on hand to give advice out to people.
And can they buy the books online?
Yeah, I mean, there are links on my website to my own books and on Amazon.co.uk. Basically, if anybody just does a search in Amazon on my name, they'll find all my books come up there.
Mike, what's the website again?
It's www.mikehallowell.com. And my surname has a quite unusual spelling. My surname, it's Hallowell. So that's www.mikehallowell.com.
Mike, you're an interesting man. Thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.